This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of the program, we're going to be talking about elder care facility abuse. We'll be focusing on litigation and estate planning for the protection of elder residents in elder care facilities. My guests are Peter Stern, a specialist in estate planning, trust, and probate law, certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization with office in Palo Alto; Catherine Stebner of the San Francisco law firm of Stebner and Associates; Peter Lomhoff with law office in Oakland; and Prescott Cole, staff attorney with California Advocates for Nursing Home Reform. This segment of Your Legal Rights is made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, which certifies specialization in 11 fields of law, the National Board of Trial Advocacy, the Family Law Section of the State Bar, and the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. I welcome all of you who are in the studio with me, and Peter Stern, who's at his office, and all of you listening to the program. Let's start with you, Peter Stern, if you would. What are the major documents that you feel someone should have in terms of protecting themselves should they have to get any kind of facility care?
Thank you, Chuck. Well, as a planner, the most important documents that I'd focus on with my clients would be having good, flexible powers of attorney, an asset management power of attorney, and, of course, a healthcare power of attorney, which allows the agent to make healthcare decisions when the individual can't make them anymore, and also gives a person the opportunity to design what he or she wants to happen at the end of life. With an asset management power of attorney, the agent is able to enter into contract and make agreements on behalf of the principal. And so often when someone goes into a facility, it's a moment of crisis, it's a moment of great emotional strain, and the principal is often coming out of a hospital, may well be completely incapacitated or certainly foggy enough so that he or she can't really sign any agreements. So having those documents in hand is really critical.
I know one of the things that you wanted to bring up, Peter, is the fact that in many of these care facilities, there are arbitration agreements. What do you want us to know about that?
Well, that's a very important point to bring up, Chuck. The people you have in the studio with you are litigators, and they will go after a facility if it does harm to a resident. An arbitration agreement is an attempt to move a dispute from the court into what appears to be the neutral setting of impartial arbitration. But, of course, that can be an expensive process, an unfamiliar process to the family of someone who has been hurt in a facility. Often what happens when one goes to a facility is that there is attached to the admission agreement, or in some cases perhaps actually interleaved in the agreement, although the agreements are supposed to not have arbitration built right into them, and these agreements can be binding. So in signing in your father or your mother or your loved one, you might end up signing the clause that says you agree to go to binding arbitration if there is a dispute with the facility. Now, often, well, I hope not often, but from time to time, someone can be harmed or killed in a facility, and in all likelihood, there is some negligence involved. And if you've signed a binding arbitration agreement, then you lose your right. In most cases, you lose your right to sue, although I'd be interested in hearing what the litigators may have another take on that. So one of the things that I like to tell my clients when they come in to do powers of attorney is that we can put into a power of attorney a clause that, and let me just read you a sample bit of language if I can get it out in front of me here, that we can put in language that prohibits the attorney, in fact, from signing an arbitration agreement. For instance, my attorney, in fact, shall not have the power to contract, agree to, consent to, or otherwise enter into any arbitration agreement on behalf of the principal. Now, let's say that you're in a hurry. Mom has just gotten out of the hospital. They've given you a one-inch thick stack of documents to sign off on and to initial. I mean, it's worse than selling a house, all the documents you have to sign. And you go through that, and before you know it, you acting as mom's attorney, in fact, have signed an arbitration agreement. Well, of course, you have a couple of remedies. First of all, if you realize that, you can rescind that within 30 days. But most people won't know that law or won't even pay attention to it until the critical event happens and mom is harmed and you go to a litigator and you say, well, I want to sue this facility for what they've done to my mother. And they look at the admission agreement and say, oh, well, you signed this arbitration agreement. And then you pull out the power of attorney and say, ah, yes, but my power of attorney said that I am not allowed to contract for to sign an arbitration agreement. Therefore, the arbitration agreement would be null and void, and California courts have held that that is the case.
Even if you don't rescind it within 30 days under California law?
Well, this is one where the power of attorney prohibits you from committing the principle to arbitration. So if the document, on its face, the power of attorney says, my attorney, in fact, shall not have the power.
So in other words, okay. So the courts will recognize the fact that even though you may have unfortunately signed a document with an arbitration agreement, even though this is much later after your loved one has been injured in a care facility, you can still rescind this thing. Is that right?
Well, not just rescind it, but you can say it never happened because you signed using a power of attorney that did not allow you to commit the principle to arbitration.
All right, let me get some other input here. One of the things that my guests have done is supplied to me cases that they have filed. We're not going to name the names of facilities. We're not going to name the names of plaintiffs. But one of the things that I have seen that is in major lawsuits in the federal court, the Superior Court of California, there seems to be a problem of failure to have adequate staffing, inadequate training, and this has led to people not being properly cared for in these various facilities. And I wonder, Catherine, if you would define for us the difference between the skilled living facility and let's say other facilities that we may be talking about on this segment of your legal rights.
So Chuck, people, when something happens to them, the families don't know the differences between the types of facilities. So essentially there's two basic kinds. There is a skilled nursing facility, which people call a nursing home. And then there is something called a residential care facility for the elderly, which is also called an assisted living facility. And a nursing home or skilled nursing facility is somewhere where you get skilled nursing care. So you have medical issues that need to be dealt with, and typically that's where you'll go after something happens to you in the hospital. As opposed to a assisted facility, that's where you go lots of times when you need some help with your activities of daily living. Lots of people might be very healthy from a medical standpoint, but they have dementia. That's a big one. They just need help putting on their clothes, getting their meals, and things like that. People don't know the differences between those. And what we've been seeing, all of us in our practices, is that there's sort of what I will call a trickle-down effect, where people who used to be in hospitals are now in skilled nursing facilities. People in skilled nursing facilities are now in the assisted facilities. And you've got sicker people in California in these facilities. And that's when things go wrong, because they're in the wrong facility.
How do they go? Are you saying they go from let's say a hospital to a skilled facility and somehow find themselves then subsequently in a residential care facility? How does that happen? How does someone go from a skilled facility to a residential care facility?
So what typically might happen, somebody breaks their hip. They go to get a hip replacement. They go to a skilled nursing facility to get rehabbed. Their Medicare runs out. They're not able to be rehabbed anymore, so they have to go. But they need some help. So they would typically then go to an assisted facility, which is not paid for by any government funds.
No Medicare on this,
no,
huh?
No. An assisted living facility in California is all private pay.
Wow.
Very expensive.
Incredible. Peter, you have dealt with other facilities, nursing homes, have you not?
I deal mainly with nursing homes. That's where I see the situation that Catherine mentioned.
Now, Medicare covers the cost of nursing homes, does it not, or does it?
To a certain extent. If you come out of an acute care hospital, such as what Catherine just mentioned, say with your hip replacement, Medicare will cover you in the nursing home as long as you are certified as making progress on your mm-hmm. recovery. Mm-hmm. And when that's no longer certified, you no longer get Medicare. And if you have planned well with the help of someone like Peter Stern, you may be eligible for Medi-Cal, which will pay quite a bit less for your care. But it is still some government help for skilled care, skilled nursing care.
What I have found, or what you've told me in preparing for the program, is that, and I think, Peter Stern, if you would respond to this, if you would, please. It sounds to me in some of these facilities that the resident, that is the person who needs this care, may be paying somewhere in the neighborhood of $8,200 a month. Did I mishear you, or is that correct, Peter Stern?
No, Chuck, that is the average, approximately the average private pay rate for long-term care facilities, wow. as determined by the Department of Healthcare Services earlier this year. That goes up every year, of course, but many facilities in the Bay Area are much more than that. I have clients who are paying over $10,000 a month privately for their family
wow.
members.
Incredible. Prescott, what can you tell us? I mean, you're specializing, CANNR, that's the California Advocates for Nursing Home Reform. You've been its staff attorney for many, many years. What are you guys trying to do?
Well, I'd say that for purposes of this conversation, think of CANNR as
CANHR.
California Advocates for Nursing Home Reform. And we're an entity, we're a nonprofit that helps consumers navigate the long-term care system. Mm-hmm. If somebody needs to know about the long-term care Medi-Cal program, how to qualify for that, we have and within our office, we have an advocate unit. They'll help people understand that. We have fact sheets on our website. And along with that, we have information about what individuals need to know when they're faced with long-term care. We have like checklists for nursing homes or residential care facilities. We have a guide for what to look for when you go in there. And if an individual, if your loved one is in a facility, it's sort of what to do, how to have a better outcome for the resident. And remember, these aren't patients in nursing homes. They're residents. This is where they live.
Mm-hmm.
And so the family members, the loved ones, are really going to have to take on strong advocacy, and they need to know what to look for and be on guard and be there as much as they can.
Well, okay. I mean, obviously, the cases that, and we're not going to mention any defendants' names nor any plaintiffs' names, but the cases that Peter Lomhoff and Catherine Stebner have submitted to me to review, what we're having here are people go into these things where they think that there's adequate staffing to take care of people.
Right.
It turns out that it's not adequate staffing, that people are, in effect, negligently handled. Prescott, yes.
Staffing is the key.
Yeah.
And, you know, by law in California, there's a certain amount of staff that the facility is supposed to have. Below that level, you're guaranteed to have problems. And the level that we have is inadequate anyway. Now, the problem with staffing is not only having the bodies there to take care of people, the staff, but the training of the staff, too. In California, you're only required 160 hours before you become a certified nurse's assistant. Put it into perspective, if you want to get a license to be a hairdresser in California, you need 1,600 hours. So you get a license, you're overworked, you're underpaid. It's a very, very difficult job, and the turnover rate is astounding. Some of these places, over 100% turnover rate every year.
Now, when you say turnover rate, of the employees?
Of the employees. And
is that because it's so stressful?
It's a very difficult job, and they don't get the support from management that they need. And then when a lawsuit happens, the litigators are going to go very deep and find out what was really going on, and I think staffing is the key.
Yeah, I'd like to say something.
Prescott,
go ahead.
Sorry, this is Peter.
Yeah.
Prescott, how much is a person who works in a long-term care facility paid on the average?
It might be around $14 if you work into different...
$14 an hour?
Yeah, I mean, it's all over the place, but when you look at the kinds of work they need to do, they're just so underpaid and underappreciated as well.
Catherine.
Yeah, I'd like to say that reiterate that staffing is the key to everything. And we have done a lot of class action cases with trying to get injunctions to get staffing levels up. And when we do our cases, what we find is the people who actually work at the facilities are also victims as well. I mean, they have too much work to do. And it's the companies, it's not just negligence. I want to be very clear about that. These are companies who are making some of them have to make a 25% return on investment, that there are bonuses paid to the administrators of these facilities for
making enough money. Who do no care of the patients or the residents at all.
Correct. And so this is driven by money. Before the show, we were talking about how this is really about, for example, with skilled nursing facilities, is really about real estate. This is not about
just selling a business and land. Is that right?
Yes, that's what this is about. These are owned by REITs. So the focus
A REIT.
come on, go ahead.
Real estate investment trust.
Yeah. I mean, basically, these are people. It's investors who are investing in these large chains to make a lot of money. There's a lot of money to be made in long-term care industry, especially in the assisted living arena. And so, I want to be really clear that it's not just negligence. I mean, there are business decisions that are made by corporate. Really, that are geared toward killing people.
Well, let me say this is Prescott.
I mean, I'll be blunt about it.
Let me say there's an incentive for the facilities that take Medi-Cal to understaff. And that's because what Medi-Cal does is it gives a fixed amount to the facility per day per resident. And about 70% of the facility's cost really are staff. Mm-hmm. And so if you understaff, you're paid anyway. It's like a per diem.
So your profit increases as you reduce the staff.
Exactly.
Profit increases.
Exactly. And we looked at this one chain. They had 60 facilities in California. And every day they were coming below the mark of 3.2, which is the state says you have to have 3.2 hours per day per resident. Anyway, every day they were coming under that 3.0, 3.1. Mm-hmm. Big deal. Mr. Cole only had 3.0. You add it up. They have about 100 beds in 60 facilities. Every day they were coming under that amount. Mm-hmm. And by the way, it's about $15 for the average for the pay. And they had filched over 1 million hours of time. Wow. They got paid for time. No staff was there. They call it ghost staffing. They made $15 million for doing nothing.
Let me tell you, all of you, if you've tuned in just a little bit late, this is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're doing a program on elder care facility abuse. We're focusing on, to some degree, there's a lot to this, but we're going to do the best we can to get over the major issues. We're talking about litigation. We're talking about estate planning for the protection of elder residents in elder care facilities. My guests are Prescott Cole. He's a staff attorney with Canner. That's California Advocates for Nursing Home Reform. And that website is Canner, CANHR.org, if you want to go to the website. Other guests are Catherine Stebner of Stebner and Associates in San Francisco, Peter Lomhoff, whose office is in Oakland, and Peter Stern, who's a certified specialist in estate planning. His office is in Palo Alto. And for those of you who are listening to the full hour, I will in a few minutes give you our toll-free number, and you can call in with your questions and your comments if you wish. We're doing this program live on Wednesday, December 7th. And let me just ask you this. We talked about Peter Lomhoff. Did you want to say something? Go ahead.
Just a little on what Prescott was saying about staffing. Even when nursing homes meet the required minimum of 3.2 hours of care per person per day, that's woefully inadequate for anybody. But what we often see is facilities will provide that level of care, but they go out of their way to recruit very sick people coming out of hospitals, acute care hospitals, which means they get paid high rates by Medicare to take care of these people, but they still keep their staffing levels at the absolute minimum and pocket the difference. That money is paid by Medicare supposedly to take care of these folks, and instead it goes into the owner's pockets rather than providing enough staff to provide the care that's needed.
The average consumer who's not a lawyer, who's not a litigator, who's not an estate planning attorney, I feel is at a great disadvantage. What suggestions do you have for people? I mean, Prescott, you talked about the Kanner website and the various sheets or information that's available for people. But what can the average person do? Let's say a son or a daughter who's concerned about getting their parent into one of these facilities. Catherine, what comments do you have?
Well, my first comment is to go to Kanner's website, because that's a good place to start. Unfortunately, the state of California does not post in real time what's really going on as to what the track record is or who actually owns the facilities. And I think what some of the people listening to the show should do should contact their representatives and talk to people in Sacramento and demand that they get information about who actually owns these nursing homes. Because if they actually found that out, they would make different decisions.
And why would that? If they find out,
if
who
they found out that, for example, that a REIT owned it, they might feel differently than if a physician and his wife owns it or something like that. Because I've been doing this for over 30 years, and it takes me months to figure out sometimes who owns these places.
Oh, my goodness.
And so a consumer cannot do that. So I think that people should demand that the state of California demand that they get information and it be put in a public site so people actually know who owns these places, and actually demand that the records of these facilities be in an easy place that people can go to. Mm-hmm. I mean, in this day and age, that's a crime that you cannot go onto a website to find out who owns a place and what their track record is. When it's your mother or your father, I mean, we can Google everything in a second and find out anything we want about, you know, hair care products.
Sure.
But we can't find out information about where we're going to send our mother or our father, and that's a crime. So that's got to change. And unfortunately, you asked us at the beginning, you know, what are people supposed to do? Unfortunately, there's not a lot they can do other than going to, you know, Kanner's website, which, you know, they do the best they can, but there's just not as much information as should be on it.
Peter Lamont.
Yes, I am as pessimistic as Catherine about this, but there is a little bit of information out there. And one possibility is type into the Google search line the name of the nursing home followed by the initials CDPH.
CDPH.
California Department of Public Health.
Okay.
And search on that search. That will come up with the California Department of Public Health page on the individual nursing home. And there is some incomplete, out-of-date information about state and federal investigations of problems at that nursing home.
Mm-hmm.
Not adequate, but certainly a good place to begin if you want to know who has the most horror stories.
Well, this is Prescott again. And one thing about the information that is available, as Peter mentioned, it's dated. And dated information doesn't tell you what's happening in
right
real
now.
Time. Right now.
Right now,
real time.
Yeah.
And that's it could be anything.
And I will say that it's even worse for assisted living. There's more information for skilled nursing facilities, mm-hmm. but assisted living, which is where most people will end up in the state of California, there's hardly any information. So that really needs to be beefed up.
Right. In California, there's 7,800. This is Prescott. There's 7,800 RCFEs, or residential care facilities for the elderly, and 7,000 of the 7,800 are 6 beds or less. These are people's homes that they converted into assisted living business. And so tracking that is...
It's very difficult, I would presume.
Impossible, right?
I presume. So you are saying, if I may understand you correctly, it's not just that the son or daughter who's trying to place their parent in a care facility goes to a potential care facility and goes in there, takes a look, see who's there, what's going on, et cetera. That's not adequate.
Right. This is Prescott again. And things happen really quick. Typically what happens in a hospital, the discharge planner in the hospital has to get that bed out. It has to get the person out. And so when a family member comes into the hospital, they're notified that your loved one is going to be moved to a nursing home. They print out a list of the facilities that have beds available, pick one, and they step back. And what happens is in the hospital, they send out to all these nursing homes on their list that we have a patient with this kind of acuity They need these kinds of care. Do you have a bed available, yes or no? Mm-hmm. And so that's where this information comes in. So the consumer is put with a piece of paper in their hand to make that decision and make it quick. And if you're not there, they're going to make it for you.
Really?
Yeah.
Peter Lamov.
And a further difficulty, which Prescott mentioned, is change happens very suddenly in these facilities. When there's a change of management, a change of ownership, a halfway decent facility can suddenly crash. Nobody's in charge, and awful things happen very suddenly. So up-to-date information is not available, but often a manageable situation turns into a crisis very suddenly when the management and operation of the facility changes.
And let me say
let me get back to you in just a moment, Prescott, if you would. For those of you who may be getting this program delayed, I just want to let you know, if you want to hear the entire hour, it is free as a podcast. If you want to jot this down, www.kalw.org/RSS. www.kalw.org/RSS if you want to hear the entire hour program, because in just a couple of minutes or so, I'm going to give the toll-free number. But Prescott, go ahead.
Yeah, I want to say that this is an area of law. Litigating in this area is probably the most difficult. The laws that protect the individual has been abused or neglected in a nursing home, almost insurmountable. The level of proof is almost that of proving a criminal offense.
Wow. Peter Lamhoff, please.
Basically, that's right. The difficulty in this area is it's many lawyers want to get into it. It looks interesting, exciting, rewarding, but this is really weird, far out technical
stuff.
We have an odd little specialty, and
we've been doing this a long time. We all know each other, and it's actually the best job in the world.
All right, everybody, here's the toll-free number if you'd like to call in with your question, your comment for my guest. It's 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. Wherever you may be, we're live on the Internet at www.kow.org. The program is now, in the last year and a half or so, uplinked to the NPR satellite so that it is distributed beyond California to other stations in the United States. So if you're listening to us live, and we're doing this on Wednesday evening, December 7th, join us. If you get this program delayed and you hear this number that I'm going to give again, remember that we're doing this program on Wednesday evening, December 7th. The toll-free number again, 866-798-8255. Support for KOW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation in both San Francisco and Marin County. And for a referral to a lawyer or the Bay Area Mediation Services Program of the San Francisco Bar, it's 415-989-1616, 415-989-1616. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own at 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. In California, every county has a bar association and a lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours. Tell them what the problem is. They'll do their best to try to find someone who's experienced for you in the area and set you up with for a half an hour consultation. This is a great consumer service. With some exception, for a half an hour throughout California, you will be paying between $25 and $35 for the half hour. And that money doesn't go to the attorney. It goes to the lawyer referral service to keep it going. So it's a fine service and something I recommend. For those of you who are looking for a certified specialist in the law, 11 specialties, and that's the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, you might want to go to www.calbar.ca.gov. Go to the upper left corner of your screen and click on actually legal specialists, and you'll find out in your county who the legal specialists are in any one of those 11 fields. So again, let me tell you, for those of you who have joined us in the last few minutes, who my guests are. We have Catherine Stebner of the San Francisco law firm of Stebner and Associates. We have Peter Stern, a specialist in estate planning, trust, and probate law, whose office is in Palo Alto. We have Peter Lomhoff, who has an office in Oakland, and we have Prescott Cole, who's staff attorney with California Advocates for Nursing Home Reform. And I'll repeat that website for you as a way to educate yourself. And I highly recommend that you do this and take the time when you are looking at a document to put your parent or whoever it may be into a care facility, read it. Don't just take it for granted. Read it and take the time to read it. Kanhr's website is canhr.org, canhr.org. And we're going to start with Joan. Welcome to the program, Joan.
Thank you.
Go ahead. You're on the air.
My question is, I'm really happy to be hearing everything that you're talking about in terms of staffing. My question is specific to memory care facilities. I heard what you said about staffing levels required, but I also understand that California law requires that in a dementia facility, there has to be sufficient staffing to meet the needs of the residents, but there's no number associated with that. So if you have 10 or 20 or 30 people, none of whom can walk by themselves or change themselves or eat by themselves, all of whom need diaper changes and showers and constant monitoring, and the facility that my mother is in, they're not paying $8,200 a month. They're paying $10,000 and $12,000 and $14,000 a month plus levels of care, but the levels of care never get increased because the staffing never gets increased. And there doesn't seem to be anything that the families can do because the management is so secretive. So, I mean, I've exhausted the Kanhr website. I'm so in love with Kanhr, I've included them in my estate plan. they're the best organization.
Thank you, Joan.
You should see Prescott right now.
I've done everything that any daughter can do. And
what would you like? Let me do this. We got to keep going. Joan, let me ask you, do you have a specific point that you would like my guests to respond to?
I think that I would like to know about the staffing requirements specific to dementia care.
All right, very good.
It's supposed to be higher than other kinds of care.
Turn your radio back up and let me see if I can get some comments for you from any one of my guests. And who wants to start? Catherine, please.
Joan, you're right, and I think you're probably, your mom is probably in a large chain that has which we're not going to name any names, but there's several. And there's a base, and there's probably some sort of point system or something, I'm assuming, for different types of care that raises it maybe to about $14,000 a month. There is supposed to be more staff in the memory care, but you're exactly right. There is no number in California. So unfortunately, basically when we do our cases, we have to get a bunch of information and show that they're not having enough staff to meet their needs. But you're right, from what you're doing, the only thing you can really do is be the squeaky wheel. I mean, there is no law
in
California.
By being the squeaky wheel, what does that mean? What does that mean? What should you, as a consumer such as Joan, what should you do if you're the squeaky wheel?
Well, you need to tell them that there's not enough staff, and you should put it in writing.
Really?
Yes, because they do not want that.
They don't
want it in writing because people like me are going to sue them, and we're going to get what Joan put in writing, and it's going to prove that they knew about it, they had notice of it, that people complained about it. So every time, Joan, that you complain, don't just say it, put it in writing.
Do you think it's important that you would comment or communicate with your local legislator, member of the legislature, about the problem that you see at this facility that your parent is in?
Yes, because I think, again, the squeaky wheel with the legislator, I think that this needs to be a topic that is front and center in Sacramento. Mm-hmm. We are an aging population.
Yes, we are.
More and more people are going to be in these assisted living facilities, and this is like a tsunami that is waiting to occur.
I don't like to hear it like that, but
no,
yeah.
but it is. Yeah. And I think that, you know, Joan, I think that, you know, obviously you really care about your mom and you're doing a great job. And I also know that you probably care about other elders that are in your mom's place and going to be there later. And, you know, I know you're in a tough situation. And it sounds like what you're doing is the best you can do by being there and, you know, being vigilant. I think that's pretty much what you can do.
Keep going strong, Joan.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for calling. Prescott.
Yeah, I wanted to say that what's happening in California, you have the nursing homes, and people in the nursing homes are supposed to be in custodial care, and the RCFEs, the people are supposed to be a little bit more independent. What's happened is people that are in these RCFEs should actually be in nursing homes, but the RCFEs are allowed to get waivers to take care of people that are sicker, that need more help. Mm-hmm. And so if you have no staffing requirements, and we've already established that the staffing requirements in nursing homes are inadequate, things are destined to go very badly in these RCFEs.
Let me just give a couple more things here. Additional funding for your legal rights is made possible by the Trust in the State section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law section of the State Bar, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. For those of you in the San Francisco Bay Area, the San Mateo County Law Library is going to have a free lecture. You might want to jot this down if you or someone close to you has a criminal record. On Wednesday, January 4th at noon in Redwood City, it's How to Clean Up Your Criminal Record. Certified specialist in criminal law attorney Christopher Morales will discuss various ways to clean up a criminal record, including even how to obtain a certificate of rehabilitation and the steps necessary to apply for a pardon from the governor or the president. And you're invited to attend this free lecture at the Law Library, which is at 710 Hamilton Street in Redwood City. That's Wednesday, January 4th, 2017, folks. Yes, it's coming. It's coming. At noon, and from noon to 1, you can bring your sack lunch if you wish. If you'd like some more information, the Law Library number is 650-363-4913. 650-363-4913. I'll let you know about that again as we do other programs in the future. All right, Elaine, welcome to the program.
Oh, thanks for taking my call.
Hi.
Okay, so my mom is in an assisted living, and it's quite expensive. It's and I'm wondering, I'm trying to figure out other ways to care for her. I don't feel like the care is at the level that it could be.
What is the pay per month for your mom to be in assisted living? How much? How much?
$8,500.
Say it again.
$8,500.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And I feel like I should just retire and pay myself.
Well, that's an idea. But go ahead, Elaine. I interrupted you. Go ahead.
No, it's okay. So I was just wondering if there were any other ideas of places. I have even thought about starting my own in-home care facility, you know, for like the sick. So I was wondering if I could get some feedback on what I would need to do if I was going in that direction. Or are there any, like, daycare centers for elders in the Bay Area?
So in other words, during the day, your parent would be in a daycare center and then would come home at night. Is that your point?
Something like that, yeah.
Prescott, do you have a point?
Well, I think, yeah, there's a number of senior daycare centers, and you should make arrangements with those. And transportation will be key, and how do you pay for the transportation? And if you're looking for another facility, find out, you know, what kinds of amenities they have there, and will they take people to senior centers during the day? You know, it because this is private pay only, it's really what the market will dictate, and you have a lot of money apparently at your disposal for at least the short run on this, and looking for other facilities would probably be beneficial for your loved one. And again, we have information about a guideline for what to look for, checklist in RCFE, so check in with our advocacy group and they give you some tips and doing that.
Since your legal rights have become has gone up on the NPR satellite for broadcast throughout the country, Kanner only relates to facilities in California.
California.
Okay,
correct,
all
yeah.
right. Well, good luck to you, Elaine.
But I would say for people in other states, check our website anyway because our fact sheets know no boundary.
Good. I like your point. Hey, that's a good one. Let me give you the website again, everybody, canhr.org. Here's a question that comes in from a listener, and it's a little bit long, but I'll do it quickly, and I think it's very significant. My understanding is that Medicare is supposed to cover the cost of a patient in skilled nursing for up to 90 days. My father was transferred from a hospital to skilled nursing. The staff threatened to end his Medicare coverage after a two-week stay before he was fully rehabilitated. If he chose to stay past the two-week period, he would be charged $450 a day. And the question of this listener is, why isn't Medicare covering the period beyond the first 2 weeks? It's supposed to be 90 days. Peter Stern, can you respond to that?
Well, first of all, there's no guarantee about the 90 days, Chuck.
Oh, there isn't.
Medicare can pay up to 100 days, but that's only if the patient is still in the process of healing, coming, you know, and showing improvement. There are new standards for that, by the way. But if you're cut off at 14 days, you certainly have a right to appeal. And, you know, if you lose the appeal, you might, in fact, end up being charged for that extra time, to be sure. But often people are cut off before their need has been satisfied in terms of rehab. But there's no minimum number of days that you're guaranteed for Medicare.
Really?
People really have to get off of that.
All right. Well, thank you for that. And we have now Johnny. Johnny, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, thanks. Go ahead.
Can you hear me okay?
I sure can.
Yeah, this is Johnny from San Francisco. This is a subject that's very close to my heart. It's something that my siblings have dealt with, both my mom and my dad, in the last 2 years. And just to make it pretty quick as I can.
Please, if you do.
If my dad, who lived up in Santa Rosa, I moved him into brain care because he had Parkinson's, and I have to just, I have to give a really good vote for the board and care facilities because they saved his life. I mean, they helped him with his Parkinson's, and it's just wonderful. And then when it got to the close, and when it got to the point where we knew he was going to die, so I got to the point I was going to move him to a nursing home in Hayward where I worked, and I don't know, it was a blessing because I don't know if he knew, because before we got to that point, he passed away. Mm-hmm. So that's my first vote for the board and care. Now, more recently, my mom, who has dementia, who still has dementia, is still living in a wonderful board and care facility up in Olympia, Washington, and they're doing wonders with her. You know, she doesn't know who she is, and but before that, both her and my stepdad did live in a nursing home before that, and they both hated it, and you know, and I can't talk about the monetary value, but I just wanted to put a plug in for the assisted living system, at least that I've had experience with.
All right. Well, let me. Any comments? Thank you, Johnny, very much for that. Any comments, Prescott?
Please. Yeah, I mean that is optimal. I mean the. If you look at a nursing home, the nursing home was a cross between a hospital and the poorhouse. I mean, its model is having as many people in there as possible in economy of scale, where the assisted living places are really there to help people that need a little bit of assistance. I mean, that is the mm-hmm. model. Mm-hmm. And there's certainly some wonderful places, and there are a few, let me say, good nursing homes out there as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's dire, but it's not completely the end for everybody. But we're trying to really get this message across that everybody needs to be alert, wake up. What Peter Stern was talking about is be prepared for going in. Kanner can offer some guidance, and then if bad things happen, we have the litigators. That's your only line of defense because, unfortunately, we have a system where law enforcement isn't really equipped to go in and tackle one of these. I mean, the litigators can tell you, what does it cost to do one of these litigating cases?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, here we have this terrible fire in Oakland that just occurred where 36 people were killed.
Right.
And apparently the news I heard this evening was that people kept complaining to the police department over there. And did the police department have any responsibility to call the planning department or whatever it is? And no one seems to know that. And so this is in
well,
terms
right,
of...
Right, because if you think about it, all right, you get tough with them, you shut them down. Who's going to come in and take care of the people?
Well, that's a good point, too. All right, well, okay. What you got to do is be as aggressive, in my opinion, a consumer as you can be. I'm wondering, Peter Stern, if it makes any sense if a son or daughter sees their parent beginning to fail, and let's say there are no documents such as the documents you were talking about at the top of the program, if there are no documents like that, do you think it makes sense for people to anticipate that, well, it looks like my mom or my dad's going to have to go into one of these facilities? Do you think at that point, before this happens, that it's very important for someone to go with their parent while the parent is still competent, hopefully, to talk about a durable power of attorney for health care, to talk about asset power of attorney for asset management, et cetera? What do you think about that, Peter?
Well, of course, you want to do things when your parent, your loved one, has the ability to sign documents. I mean, the default, if you wait too long, often a facility will accept a family member's signature on an admissions agreement, but you may not have authority after that to give consent for medical treatment.
Yeah.
If you don't have a health care power of attorney.
Yeah.
You won't be able to access that person's money unless, in fact, you're on a joint account in order to pay the bills. So having something in hand is very important. I mean, the default down the road, it's so expensive to do and so cumbersome and invasive, is something called a conservatorship.
Mm-hmm.
And we do those only as a last resort where you have you have to have access to a loved one's money. The only way you can get it is by going to court to get an order appointing someone with authority to do that.
Do you believe, Peter Stern, that it is important if one's parent has significant assets, let's say a significant amount of money in a savings account or a checking account, pardon me, do you think it makes sense for the son or the daughter to say, Mom or Dad, you know, I want to protect you. Will you put me on your account so I can be on your checking account or your savings account as a joint tenant, whatever the proper language is? Peter, what comments do you have on that?
Well, that could be appropriate, but in most cases it's not. In most cases, I'd want to see that significant sum of money in a living trust.
Okay.
I'd want to see the individual, the son or the daughter, have access as a successor trustee or perhaps as an attorney in fact,
yeah,
with power to step in when the parent loses capacity.
Thank you very much for that. That's very helpful. Anne, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Yes.
Hi.
I'm calling to ask you a question about boarding care in California. My sister is in a boarding care home in San Francisco, and generally I think the woman is quite nice, and it's a nice home. But she's done several things that made me wonder, how did she ever get licensed if she doesn't really know the rules or the regulations? I visited out of the blue a couple weeks ago, and she seemed kind of flustered and said, don't ever come without letting me know you're coming here. And I'm fairly certain that that's against the rules.
Are you sure that she is licensed by the state of California, Anne?
I've been told by the social worker that yes, she is.
Oh, she is.
There is a license.
Uh-huh.
But I'm wondering how she ever got that. Her English ability is poor, and I don't know if there's an exam. Is there an examination? When my sister was lost once, she made no contact with us or the police overnight when she didn't return. She's done some really, you know, things that really bother me.
Yeah.
And I don't think she's a bad person, but I'm wondering, how could she have gotten this license if she doesn't have common sense?
Well, let me get a comment for you, if you'll turn your radio back up, and thank you very much for calling. Peter Lomhoff, please.
Sure. Several points there. First of all, I like the idea of visiting every day of the week. I mean, different days of the week, different times of the day, morning, night, see what's going on in all different circumstances, whether the person in charge at the facility likes it or not, especially if they don't. Mm-hmm. About licensure, you can look these things up. I believe on the Canner website there is a list. You can also look online. I believe the tag would be CDPH, California Department of Social Services, the
Licensing and Certification.
Community Care Licensing, CCL.
CCL.
Community Care Licensing is the subdivision of the Department of Social Services.
Well, here Ann is saying, though, that she has been told by the social worker, who we presume is a county employee.
Who may or may not be right. I would check it out myself.
So if, assuming for the moment, that this woman who has this board and care facility is licensed, but she's really not with it, what comments do you have for Ann on this?
Community care licensing can make a complaint to the Department of Social Services. Sometimes they investigate. Sometimes they even do a good job on their investigations. And just as often, unfortunately, they are unable to. They are overwhelmed, under-budgeted, and all the rest.
Community care licensing, is this a state?
State agency.
It is a state agency.
Part of the State Department of Social Services.
I see. Right. All right. Yeah, Prescott, please.
Yeah, right. And don't forget the ombudsman. The ombudsman have authority to go in not only nursing homes, but also assisted living facilities, these board and cares.
Now, when you say ombudsman, how do you find this person?
Just look in the phone book. No, I'm sorry. Go online and say the county and just say ombudsman.
Oh, for the county.
Yeah, every county has the ombudsman program. And these are people that they're trained. They're volunteers for the most part, but they have state employee. State employees.
They're county employees.
County employees that have the authority to go into these facilities. Mm-hmm. They know what the resident rights are. They know what to look for. And those are the eyes of the resident. And they're also the voice of the resident. Mm-hmm. If there's a problem, then they identify the problems. They make their own complaints. And the complaints will go to the licensing entity and also to law enforcement.
Yes. Catherine, please.
So, Ann, I've had the opportunity to take 100 depositions or so of people.
How many?
Like 100 or so of these people, and they never know the regulations. And it is so easy to get this license. It would make your head spin. And it's always really kind of interesting when you take the depositions of the administrators or the owners, you ask about their work history. It's pretty amazing what they did right beforehand. You know, I like worked in a donut shop. I worked at Best Buy, you know, these sorts of things. And so it's very, very easy. There's a very, very low standard to get one of these licenses. And so I think that that's more common.
Catherine, how do you think Ann should deal with this at this point where she's getting very concerned?
Well, Ann, I'm concerned that she doesn't want you to – I mean, that statement to me is very concerning, that don't come here unless you tell
me.
Having been around the block for a while, that's even an unusual statement for me to hear. So,
yeah,
Ann, I'm a little concerned about that. I'm less concerned that she knows the law because most don't. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's unfortunate. But the fact she said that to you is a real red flag to me.
Do you think Ann should be looking at another board and care facility to see if transfer her mother from this one in San Francisco?
Or? So, Ann, does your mom have dementia?
Well, I think Ann's gone.
Okay.
I think she's gone.
Okay. Well, she has dementia. I mean, one thing you got to remember is, I mean, there is such thing as transfer trauma. That's the problem that a lot of these people have is that they say, I want to move my mom or my dad. They're at the facility, but, you know, I don't like the place, but I don't want to move them somewhere. You know, if you transfer someone with dementia, you know, it can cause real problems. And so you're always in this really difficult situation. So I guess Ann's not on the line anymore, but I'd want, you know, you'd have to weigh those things.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely I agree with Peter Lomhoff that you should be going to the facility unannounced at different times.
Who at this point, with Ann, who is searching for what do I do now, who should she contact, would you suggest, in terms of trying to get some satisfaction as opposed to continually worrying about this?
The ombudsman, possibly,
okay. All right.
Depending on the county.
Yeah.
There's different levels of ombudsman at the county. And also Canner. I mean, we keep talking about Canner, but Canner's been there. They're the only game in town, really. And so there's great advocates there, and they really had as much inside information as anyone can have on these facilities.
Here is another question that a listener has posed, and this is very, frankly, very interesting. My father has dementia and is living at home with caregivers 24/7. One of the caregivers, out of the blue, proposed marriage to another family member living in my father's house. Should I? Yeah, and that's Prescott who just laughed at that. Should I treat this as a joke, or should I be concerned about possible elder abuse?
This is another show. It's financial elder abuse.
Yeah, we should do a show on financial elder abuse.
Okay, I guess we better.
Yeah.
Okay, so that is, it's more than a joke. That's scary.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes,
one thing I want to say that, you know, in numbers, there's a little bit more safety. So family members that are concerned should seek out the family council. Nursing homes have to have a family council, and also residential care facilities. You can form family councils, and then with Canner, we have materials to help you to do that. But again, with the numbers of people, you have a better chance to address the problems that you're seeing. So think family councils.
All right. Again, to help you in doing some research to begin to educate yourself and see what may be available, I want to give you Canner's website again. I hope you have something to write this down. Canner, CANHR.org. That's the place to start educating yourself. Peter Stern, we have about less than a minute. I'd like you to complete with some final words from you. Go ahead.
Wow. Well, it's been a heck of a program, Chuck. I would just emphasize, I mean, you've heard some wonderful presentations by people who are there to defend the rights of residents of nursing homes and assisted living facilities who have been hurt. I would, as a planner, just want to put the emphasis from my point of view on taking what steps you can with your parents, with your loved ones, to make sure they have adequate documents in place. Giving authority, setting ground rules, and avoiding arbitration prior to getting sick, so that when the moment comes, they're in good shape.
Yeah. Don't wait until it's too late. I want to thank the four of you very much for joining us on the program. Peter Stern in Palo Alto. Peter, thanks so much. Great to have you by phone.
Always a pleasure.
Traffic was terrible tonight, so I'm glad you didn't have to drive up here. Catherine Stebner, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Great to have you here. Peter Lumhoff, thanks so much. I know you had a ride from Oakland that was kind of hectic.
Yes, and somehow I made it. But thank
good,
you
I'm glad
much.
You
I'm
did. And Prescott Cole, thank you very much.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Prescott suggested we do this. Thank you very much. All right, next time on Your Legal Rights, we're going to have a discussion of serious personal injuries and wrongful deaths involving truck accidents during the holiday season. And you know, we're going to have millions of deliveries, by the way. My guest will be Truck Accident Attorneys, Academy of Truck Accident Attorneys, Rena Samole-Leiserman and Joseph Freed. That's next time on Your Legal Rights. Your Legal Rights production staff members are program engineer Joanne Marr and production assistant Martin McClain. Funding for this segment of Your Legal Rights has been made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. Additional funding by the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which also funds the public radio satellite transmission of the program for national distribution. For those of you who are looking for a specialist in any one of the 11 areas, it's www.calbar.ca.gov for specialists, legal specialists in your county. Thank you for joining us on Your Legal Rights Public Radio, and please join us next time on your public radio station. I'm Chuck Finney.